This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, day three of the confirmation hearings. Hearings were held today for Dr. Ben Carson, President-elect Trump's pick for Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Congressman Mike Pompeo of Kansas, who Mr. Trump has tapped for CIA director, and retired Marine General James Mattis, who has been nominated to serve as the Secretary of Defense. Now, Mattis appeared before the Senate Armed Services Committee today. Jacqueline Klimas, defense correspondent for the Washington Examiner, was in the hearing, and she'll join us in just a moment. Also, I'll get my favorite general, General Jerry Boykin's take on how General Mattis did in today's hearing. And we are a step closer to seeing Obamacare repealed, despite the protests from the White House. The Senate approved a budget resolution in the wee hours of the morning. It now heads to the House. Freshman Republican Congressman Jim Banks, who pledged to be a part of the repeal, joins us later from the House floor. And a recently released poll shows that an overwhelming percentage of Americans want religious liberty protected, even when it conflicts with government laws. Andrew Walther, who is the Vice President of Communications of the Knights of Columbus, is here with more on that story later on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, confirmation hearings continue today for President-elect Trump's cabinet picks. Before the Senate Armed Services Committee was retired Marine General James Mattis, who has been tapped to head the Pentagon. Seemed to go pretty smooth for him, but I want to get a firsthand report from Jacqueline Klimas, who is a defense correspondent for the Washington Examiner. Jacqueline, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you were in various hearings today. It's been a busy day on Capitol. In fact, it's been a busy week. What were your observations of the hearing in the Senate Armed Services Committee?
The hearing definitely didn't have an overly controversial tone. It was a mostly friendly hearing. Mattis did face some pointed questions from Democrats on his positions about women serving in the infantry or gays and lesbians serving openly. He said that he wasn't coming into the job with any plans to change anything, but would look at any problems if they were brought to his attention. But mostly it was just lawmakers sort of gauging where he stood on matters of national security and sort of the state of the world and how prepared the military is to handle that.
I've got a clip of an exchange with him, actually a question that was asked by John McCain regarding the threats that are here in the world today. And it was kind of a contrast with what we saw, I think, yesterday with the hearing with the president's selection for Secretary of State. I want to play this and get your take on it.
As we are all aware, that following World War II, a world order was established, which has held for basically the last 70 years. Do you believe that world order is now under more strain than it's ever been?
I think it's under the biggest attack since World War II, sir, and that's from Russia, from terrorist groups, and with what China is doing in the South China Sea.
And that would argue for us making sure we're adequately prepared to meet these challenges.
I think deterrence is critical right now, sir. Absolutely, and that requires the strongest military.
Do you think we have a strong enough military today in order to achieve that goal?
No, sir.
Jacqueline, let me ask you, does this clear, direct response in terms of identifying the threats to national security and the world order, pinpointing Russia as at top of the list, does that help the Trump administration, who many on Capitol Hill have felt maybe just a little too close to Russia?
Matt has talked a lot about Russia in the confirmation hearing. He called them a strategic competitor and said that we should cooperate with them where we can, but that the U.S. needs to defend its interests when there's a difference of opinion between the two countries. So I think that has certainly took a harder line with respect to Russia than we've seen Trump take, but at the same time, he was certainly not as far as McCain went. Senator McCain, in his opening statement, basically said, Russia will never be a friend to us. They've said they have to be an enemy to us for Russia to succeed. So I think we saw that as kind of in the middle of these two extremes when it comes to how the U.S. is going to get along with Russia the next 4 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought he handled himself very, very well. Jacqueline, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you being on Washington Watch today.
Thank you.
Interesting. I think it was very interesting in how the hearing didn't seem to be any fireworks in this hearing. I think he was very calm under fire, which does not surprise me. But I want to get a take from my favorite general, General Jerry Boykin, retired 3-star general for the United States Army. General Boykin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Glad to be with you here.
All right. I want you to be as objective as possible. I know it was a Marine general we're talking about here, but your thoughts on how Mattis did today?
Well, other than the uniform that he wore during his career, I thought that
You just don't. You are jealous because the Marines have a much better looking uniform.
Well, what's really bad is when your wife says the same thing, and my wife has said that multiple times.
That's why the women like the Marines. I'm just going to say
they do. I agree with you. Listen, Tony, I thought that it was he was very straightforward. Unlike most generals, it seemed that he took the stand that the less you say, the better. He did not wax eloquent on things, and I think that was very deliberate. The only thing that I think that I am concerned about is, well, two things that came out of today's hearing was that he's not in favor of rolling back this Iran deal. Now, his reasons for it, as he stated, was America gave their word and we ought to live up to it. That said, I'm concerned about that because I think that the Iranians have done nothing but violate this so-called deal ever since it started.
Well, I have to question whether or not America gave its word.
Yeah,
I guess I guess you could argue that the leaders manipulating the process gave their word, but certainly I don't think that Congress was not behind it.
Yeah. The other thing is that and I'd have to go back and look at exactly what he said, but he certainly didn't advocate for moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv, and that has been a platform pledge that Trump made, and I think that it's given what we've just done to Israel by abandoning really what is a 68-year program of support for Israel. I think that it would be in our best interest to show our allies that we will stand with our allies, that we do support Israel. The first step ought to be moving that embassy. And I don't think in today's hearing that Jim Mattis embraced that. He didn't say, from what I read, he didn't say no, but he didn't endorse it.
It's interesting when he identified the threats out there that at the top of the list was Russia. That's not different from, not unlike what the chairman of the Joint Chiefs during his confirmation hearing 18 months ago, General Munford, Marine General, also identified Russia as the greatest threat. Nothing has changed. It would suggest that maybe that threat has gotten even more intense.
Well, I think it has, and I think it has gotten more intense because if you look back 2 weeks ago, where Russia, Turkey, and Iran all met in Moscow to decide what the way ahead was in the Middle East, America was not invited. Now, what does that mean? They are peeling off allies like Turkey. Remember,
right.
Turkey's
NATO.
A NATO member.
Right.
They're peeling off our allies, and so it, has the threat increased? Yeah, the threat's increased. It's not just the military threat. It's the threat of their influence. It's their economic influence and just as importantly, their diplomatic influence and their ability to influence people that we have considered to be traditional allies.
Mm-hmm. In terms of military readiness, does he have you think he has a solid handle on the state of our nation's military?
I think he does. I don't think there's any question. Look, he's been studying this ever since he left the military, since he retired. He's been studying the condition of our military. He's written about it. He's spoken about it. And I think he left open a number of things, one of which was women in infantry units. Yeah, the media reports that he said, no, I won't change that. But I don't read what he said as being exactly that. What I read was that he said he would go back and study the data that Ash Carter had when he made the decision,
right,
and then he would make a determination. I think it was very clear, though, that he left the door open for him to review some of these social policies and potentially recommend changes to the president.
Yeah, that was my take on it, is that he was saying, I'm not going in with a predetermined outcome.
Yeah.
But I am going to look at all of this. And as you'll recall, it was the Marine Corps that was raising the concerns about this forced new policy on the military of women in frontline active combat units.
That's right, Tony. And he also talked about standards. If you can meet the standards. Well, the Marine Corps proved in their test that they ran, and they ran the most extensive evaluation of this of any of the services, they proved that it's very difficult for women to meet these standards, primarily because of their upper body strength and their overall stamina. Now, there are always some women that can do far more than you and I can do, but that's not the point. The point is, what can the average woman do? And I think that the Marine Corps has proven that the physical standards, if you expect any a significant cohort of women to be in infantry units, other than one or two here and there, you're going to have to change the standards. And I think that Mattis put a marker down today that we're not going to change the standards.
And it looks like his confirmation is going to glide through, because in order for him to serve, there had to be a waiver passed by Congress sidestepping a federal rule that prohibits a recently retired officer from serving in that capacity as Secretary of State. That was approved by the Senate already, 81-17. Mm-hmm. It now goes to the House, where approval there is almost certain as well.
Yeah. Well, and the initial vote there, just think of who the three were that voted against him in the initial vote there in the Senate. It was Gillibrand, it was Blumenthal, and it was Elizabeth Warren. I mean, three of the most uber-liberal people there, and there was no substance to their unwillingness to vote in support of this great warrior. It was all about their political leanings and just wanting to create a problem for Donald Trump in the process of getting a Secretary of Defense.
I found it interesting, General Boykin, in the remarks made by Senator John McCain regarding the Russian President Vladimir Putin. He said that the U.S. they need to see him as an enemy, and we'll never be a partner with him. And I thought, given the of course the contention over the issue of Russia and the hearings for Rex Tillerson, I thought that was an interesting statement made by John McCain.
No, I agree with you. And look, Mattis's hearing was also interesting on the issue of Russia, because he clearly identified Russia as an enemy, and I think that is significant. And people, the media is already whipping it into a frenzy that he is countering Trump's narrative. I see this as being a positive.
So your overall take, General James Mattis, going to be a good general?
He will be confirmed, and he'll be a good Secretary of Defense, yes.
All right. General Jerry Boykin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
It's great to talk with you. All right, folks, when we come back, the Congress is one step closer to repealing Obamacare. Of course, the White House pitching a fit, saying it'll be a disaster if you repeal it. How can you get a disaster out of a disaster? Anyway, when we come back, freshman Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana, who pledged to repeal Obamacare, is eager to cast the vote in the House. He joins us to talk about what's next on Washington Watch.
Isn't it refreshing to have a president that isn't hostile to Christianity? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with the American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, our country was founded on the Judeo-Christian worldview. There's no question about it. The Christian religion was dominant in early America, and there's a reason our country was called a Christian nation. We're going to see this rich history when we go to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June, and then the other one in September. In addition, we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour, but you can do both of those tours with us if you would like to. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be our historian as he tells us about our great Christian heritage and history. For more information on either of these tours, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Truth Be Told with Nate Kellum, Chief Counsel at the Center for Religious Expression.
Connecticut is threatening to revoke the charitable deduction status of groups that have Christian-based beliefs. The American Family Association is a Christian organization that promotes family values, putting them in the crosshairs of Connecticut's comptroller. Taking a page out of the IRS's book, he's launched an investigation of AFA, intending to eliminate their eligibility to receive tax-deductible donations. He claims their beliefs constitute discrimination, but the real illegal discrimination is the targeted denial of tax status on the basis of religious viewpoint. This is unconstitutional when the IRS does it, and is unconstitutional when Connecticut does it. Tax status cannot be used as a hammer to punish disfavored views.
Truth Be Told from the Center for Religious Expression, clearing the path for truth. Hear more at CRELaw.org, CRELaw.org.
Meet Dan Steiner, president of Preborn.
Jill came into our center about 8 months ago, and she was in a really difficult spot because her husband had, her boyfriend was incarcerated. She didn't have a place to live. She's out on the street. She came into our center, and when she saw her baby on the ultrasound, she says, I've got to find a way to do this. She changed from abortion-minded to wanting to choose life for her baby, and that's where we came in, coming beside that ultrasound with baby clothes, with housing for her. Her baby just delivered last Wednesday. It's a little boy. He's beautiful. That's the power of ultrasound. That's what your gift of $140 does. Five times, five free ultrasounds for women like Jill. Five babies born. Would you help us today?
80% of abortion-minded mothers choose life when they see an ultrasound of their baby. You can give now at 877-616-2396 or at afr.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, the Senate narrowly approved a complex budget resolution that paves the way for the repeal of Obamacare. And the House now will take up the budget resolution. They pass that. Then they come back with the budget reconciliation measure, which will have the repeal of, or at least the will dismantle a large portion of Obamacare and defund about 80% of the federal funds going to Planned Parenthood. Same measure that was, for the most part, same measure will be in that reconciliation that we saw in December of 2015 that we helped craft. Another shot at it, but this time the major difference is that you have a president that will sign it. Well, join me now to talk about what's next in the House as they take up this budget resolution is freshman Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana, who actually ran on the issue of repealing Obamacare, and now he's going to get a chance to see it happen. Jim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's great to be with you.
Well, congratulations once again on your election to the House of Representatives. What are you being told? What's next for the budget resolution in the House? What's going to happen?
Well, Tony, before we head home and get out of Washington tomorrow, we will have the opportunity to keep our promise to the American people and vote for the budget reconciliation. It should be the last matter that we take up tomorrow on Friday. We'll be working a long day on Friday, which I'm told isn't typical. But this is such an important opportunity to do exactly what we told the voters during the election cycle that we would do. We've heard from Vice President-elect Mike Pence twice in Republican conference meetings, and he's talked about just that this is our opportunity to be promise keepers and keep the bold promise that we made that repealing and replacing Obamacare would be the top agenda item in this Congress. And I'm happy that I get the chance to do that tomorrow.
The goal is to have this on the president's desk shortly after he takes office so that he can obviously follow through on what was a major campaign promise. One of the sticking points that we've heard this week, mostly coming from the Senate, but also from some of the more moderate members of the House, is that they want to see the replacement plan before they vote on the repeal. It sounds as if those issues have now been worked out.
Well, first and foremost, the replacement plans have been publicly available, proposed, and introduced in this Congress. There are a number of good Republican replacement plans, from the Speaker's Better Way agenda to the Republican Study Committee plan, which I've co-sponsored, which is Dr. Phil Rowe's legislation. The replacement provisions exist. Republicans have been advocating for those replacement measures, but we can't, as you know, Tony, we can't get anywhere at all until we pass the Budget Reconciliation Act tomorrow to start the process for a full repeal of Obamacare, and that's why I support the provision tomorrow.
And earlier, House Speaker Paul Ryan called the move a rescue mission, citing rising premiums and other problems with the Affordable Care Act, which he described as collapsing. Now, he promised that the repeal and replacement process would occur in a careful step-by-step fashion, that Americans would, in fact, be protected in this. But the main point is to follow through with this commitment and save America's health care system by eliminating Obamacare.
That's right, and I'm so pleased with Speaker Ryan's leadership on this measure. He understands that Obamacare is collapsing in on itself. But let me just say as well that I'm convinced, Tony, and I would be interested to hear your opinion on this as well. But I'm convinced that Speaker Ryan is the most pro-life Speaker of the House that we've ever had, and his commitment to defunding Planned Parenthood as a part of this process is very encouraging to me as someone who, my district that I would fight for and champion that cause when I got to Washington, D.C. as well. And the Speaker is just as committed to that as he is to the rest of the Obamacare repeal. And this is an optimistic moment for the conservative movement, for those of us who care deeply about these causes, that tomorrow we get a chance to begin that process.
I would absolutely agree that he is solid on life. In fact, I talked to him yesterday about the defunding of Planned Parenthood. He has been, remains committed to that. He's also committed to the issue of religious freedom. He understands the importance of that. I've actually worked with him even before he became Speaker on the issue of religious freedom, which is refreshing, because I'm going to be talking about that in my next segment, about how Americans overwhelmingly see religious liberty at risk and want something done about it. And we have a leadership in place, the president, the speaker, and the majority leader in the House, also supportive, the president. I think we're poised to see some good things happen in the next 6 months that, quite frankly, I think will shock some people at what we're able to get done here in Washington, D.C.
As a Hoosier, we're so proud that Vice President-elect Mike Pence is on the front lines of so many of these causes. And knowing him well, personally, like I do, I know he's committed to many of the pro-life, pro-family values, issues that we all care about. And this is an exciting time to be a conservative in Washington, D.C.
It is. Congressman Jim Banks, thanks so much for joining us. And again, congratulations, and we'll be watching that vote tomorrow.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
All right. Congressman Jim Banks, freshman congressman from the state of Indiana, longtime associate of the Family Research Council, and he was actually in the state legislature there in Indiana, did a great job there as a pro-family leader, military veteran as well. All right, when we come back, a new poll finds a whopping 80% believe the Supreme Court justice nominees should apply the Constitution as it was originally written. The poll also suggests that Americans believe when there's a conflict between religious freedom and government laws, which way should we go? It's not even close. Overwhelmingly, I'll tell you what they support next when we're joined by a member of the Knights of Columbus. Don't go away. We're right back after these messages.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, apparently, analysts were expecting far more policy details coming out of the Donald Trump press conference. Even though the man's still not president yet, seems to be irrelevant, they were expecting some great detail. I don't know if you watched the press conference, but there was a frenzy going on there. And I think the idea of him putting out policy details very specifically as to how his economic procedures, policies were going to get put into place, when they were going to get put into place, and exactly how they were going to impact the economy was a little premature for a president to be talking about. I think we will see from his economic panel and advisors some of this detail come up. But right now, his focus is going to be on overturning and replacing Obamacare, and then moving on in the next, I would say, 100 days to firming up his infrastructure plan, which is going to bring in private sector, not all taxpaying dollars. So it's going to be a little bit more difficult to put together. The markets don't like this, and they seem to be a little bit concerned about the lack of detail on these policies, and we are seeing some movement on the downside in the markets. I am not concerned about it. I would suggest that you read an article from townhall.com in reference to this that I wrote last week. One or two scenarios are going to happen with the markets. I have said this the day after the election and still say it, but I want to stay focused primarily on the economy.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
I'm Tony Perkins. This is Washington Watch. Earlier this, actually it was late last year, there was a report. We talked about it on the program. It was a report by the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, and it revealed, I think, the depth of the administration's hostility toward religion. The Obama-appointed chairman, Martin Castro, you'll remember this as I talk about it, stated that religious liberty was simply a justification for bigotry and prejudice and discrimination. The chairman went on further to declare that today, as in the past, religion is being used as both a weapon and a shield by those seeking to deny equality to others. Now, in its findings and recommendations, this is the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, stacked with really people hostile to religion. This report, it was the peaceful coexistence reconciling non-discrimination principles with civil liberties. This was in the findings and recommendations. The report cited firmly with the anti-discrimination laws over religious liberty, declaring that civil rights protections ensuring non-discrimination are of preeminent importance in American jurisprudence, whereas religious exemptions significantly infringe upon these civil rights, end quote. Well, a new poll that was commissioned by the Knights of Columbus showed that the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights is clearly out of step with the American people. According to this poll, the Marist poll, again commissioned by the Knights of Columbus, 65% of Americans say that when religious freedom conflicts with a government law, that it is religious freedom that should win out, 65 to 25. Joining me now to talk about this is Andrew Walther, who is with the Knights of Columbus. He's the Vice President of Communications. Andrew, thanks for joining us here on Washington Watch.
Good to be here.
Andrew, any surprises for you in this poll?
Well, you know, I think the number of people that support religious freedom, even when it conflicts with government laws, we see a definite uptrend over the last year here, and there's a definite downtrend among people that think that government laws should be observed without exception. So I think that you have that widening, which speaks to the fact that people understand the importance of their First Amendment right. And I think an even stronger number in the poll was that, you know, 57% of Americans see as an immediate priority that religious liberty should be protected. This was a poll that was based on, you know, the change in government, new people coming in. Should this be a priority for the government? 57% immediate priority, and 32%, additional 32% say important. So you're at almost 9 in 10.
That's pretty big.
Religious liberty is important, and that cuts across, you know, 66% of Republicans, 51% of independents, and 55% of Democrats. There's nobody at this point in this country that is really pushing against religious freedom conceptually when you look at party affiliation.
Well, Andrew, let me ask you about that, because has this issue of religious freedom gone from more of a theoretical discussion, academic discussion that people might have, to a very, very practical concern over the ability to live one's life according to their faith because of the policies of the outgoing administration?
Well, you know, one thing that the pollsters tell me a lot is that when people think that there's overreach happening in a policy area or another, the polling will start to swing in the other direction. This is a common kind of trend. You know, there's an action here, there's a reaction there. And so I think that, you know, over and over again, we see these kinds of reactions. And I think here you have a couple of things. First, a very strong affinity by Americans for the First Amendment. Americans really care about this. They care about our first freedom. They care about the free exercise of religion. But second, I think that the strengthening of those numbers over the last year and a half points to the fact that you have people that are increasingly concerned, and now 9 in 10 saying this is a really important issue. So I think there is an increasing understanding of the importance of this, and I think when you look around the world and you see what poor shape religious freedom is internationally, it makes us value what we have at home even more.
Yeah, and that would actually, those numbers would pretty much pair with post-election polling we saw, where 59% of Trump-Pence voters said a major factor in their decision was the Republican Party platform position on life and religious liberty. So clearly the issue of religious liberty has moved to the forefront of concern in the American society today.
Yeah, it's certainly an issue that people care a great deal about. I mean, I think that the numbers show this undeniably, and they show it over a wide variety of demographics. So it's beyond party affiliation. Even 57% of Clinton supporters agreed that, 57% of Clinton supporters were against the idea of religious freedom in this way, but 3 in 10 were for it. 3 in 10 Clinton supporters thought that religious freedom should be protected even if it went against government laws. So you have even a substantial number of people that were aligned on the other side of the ticket in the last election that see this as an important thing. I don't think it would be a surprise to anyone, given the numbers you just mentioned from the exit polling, that a lot of people who were Trump supporters saw this as a predominant issue. But 3 in 10 is not a small number.
No,
I mean, 3
no,
in
not
10
at all.
Is significant.
Andrew, thanks so much for joining us. Fascinating poll, and actually very encouraging from my perspective. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Andrew Walther, Vice President of Communications for the Knights of Columbus. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and you can actually follow a link over to see the polls. It's really good stuff. It shows. We're going to continue this conversation about religious liberty and the state of religion in America. We're going to talk about that. A Pew poll, I want to mention that, and we're going to go to the phone lines here in just a bit. Don't go away. We're back with more.
We all know what it feels like. We try to avoid it. Experts define it as an unpleasant sensory and emotional experience associated with actual or potential tissue damage, or describes in terms of such damage. What is it? It's pain. Did you realize that you probably started feeling pain at a very young age, or even before you were born? Scientific studies have increased our knowledge of life inside the womb. We now have strong evidence that unborn babies can feel pain by 20 weeks or earlier. At Family Research Council, we believe that all babies are worth protecting. We also hope that even those who don't share our pro-life commitment will listen to the medical community and support laws that protect the unborn child from cruel suffering. For more information, visit frc.org/fetal pain. That is frc.org/fetal pain.
consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Sandy Rios in the morning.
This is a time of madness. It really is. This is from the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby. He said, evil attacks the weakest, denies truth and love, is defeated through Jesus Christ. And I just love that. Evil is defeated through Jesus Christ. And so let's not be afraid. And if you are afraid, then, you know, make yourself right with God.
Sandy Rios in the morning. Weekday mornings at 7 Central on American Family Radio.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
Would you make one of the most important phone calls that you can make as far as your economic, your financial stewardship? I believe that permanent income is incredibly important to us, especially when you're retired. Listen, one thing we know for certain, the consumption of goods and your cost are never going to change. Make sure that you protect your income. Social Security, you will likely have maybe a pension. Add to permanent income with a charitable gift annuity and do the Lord's work. There's no better organization to do it with than the AFA Foundation, and no better time in our economy than right now.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. You're listening to a program that comes to you because of folks like you. Washington Watch, it does not receive any government money. It is completely supported by our listeners and supporters of the Family Research Council. If you'd like to be a part of supporting the work of the Family Research Council and keeping Washington Watch on the air, well, go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over and help us out. Become a part of the family of the Family Research Council, making programs like this and resources available as we work here in our nation's capital to advance faith, family, and freedom. All right, a couple things I want to talk about here before we go to the phone lines. Talking about this concern over religious freedom, there's a reason, because it has been under constant assault in the last almost 8 years. It didn't start at the very beginning, but it didn't take long, of the Obama administration. And of course, it's not just everything that's happened in the country as it pertains to religion is not being directed by the White House, okay? But they have given they've used the bully pulpit to basically set the example and the tone. And so we have seen a rise in the number of these atheist groups that are bullying local schools and city councils and so on and so forth. And here is another example just out today. The American Humanist Association, in a 9-page letter, complained that the Joplin, Missouri school district was violating the law by, quote, enticing students to Bible studies with donuts, and that such conduct is deceitful and inappropriate during school hours. Now, the school district has said that the study was a student-initiated activity held before class, not during instructional time, and it was entirely voluntary for students to attend. However, the Joplin, Missouri School District has yielded to the demands of this atheist group and suspended the Bible study. Now, they have left the door open, saying that they will revisit the policy and maybe, I guess they'll allow maybe a Bible study without donuts. Now, I'm hoping that just as we saw, in fact, there was another poll I'm going to make reference to, let me find it, from Pew Research, that showed Here it is. A new study of President Obama's legacy. The Pew, this is from Breitbart. In a new study of President Obama's legacy, the Pew Research Center found that religious affiliation and practice dropped off dramatically during his two terms in the White House. Pew notes in a report released this week titled How America Changed During Barack Obama's Presidency, stated that when Barack Obama took office, those who identified as atheists or agnostics, along with those who said their religion was nothing in particular, totaled only 16% of the U.S. adult population. 8 years later, as the president is on his way out, non-religious in America now make up nearly a quarter of the population. The percentage of Americans who say they believe in God, consider religion to be very important in their lives, pray daily, and attend religious services at least monthly have all dropped during the Obama years, according to Pew. The majority, though, let me underscore this, the majority of these losses have taken place among adults who identify with mainline Protestant and the Catholic denomination. Evangelical Protestants, along with historically black Christian denominations, have remained comparably stable. Well, that's because they've made religion into meaning nothing. But, again, this is the power of influence. And the president has consistently attacked in his policies religious expression and freedom in this country. And so we see a decline in religious in church attendance, religious adherence. And should we be surprised? Well, as we've seen just with these atheist groups, humanist groups attacking local school boards, city councils, you know, whether it's a manger display or, you know, even Santa Claus. Some of them consider Santa to be too religious. But maybe, and I think we may see it, that the pendulum is swinging. As Andrew was talking about, the concern where we see 89% of Americans seeing protecting religious freedom as a priority, including 57% who describe it as an immediate priority, suggests to me that they've been paying attention and they're concerned by what they've seen in the last 8 years. And with a president like Donald Trump, who has pledged to protect religious freedom, you know, talking about policies such as the Johnson Amendment, allowing churches and pastors to speak freely into the political realm. And I'm hoping to see them advocating once again as a nation the defense of religious freedom around the globe, that will inspire others to speak up. And so that the pendulum will shift all the way across the culture. Because just as the president has been, you know, kind of bullying Christians and anti-Christian, biblical Christianity, and so others have fallen in behind him and followed suit, that maybe this president will inspire Christians to start living out their faith simply because he is challenging the political correctness and the status quo. And that's what I want to, we got a few minutes here, 866-372-7234. Are you optimistic that we're going to see kind of the pendulum shift and that more Christians will begin standing up? We'll see more school boards. We'll see more city councils saying, you know what, look here, Mr. Atheist, go pound sand. You know, if you want to take away the right of our children, our school students, our junior high school students, to do student-initiated gatherings for the purpose of praying, reading the Bible, or whatever, even if they serve donuts, you know, if you don't like it, you know what, go pound sand, because we're going to do it. And that, by the way, is completely within the law. Student-initiated activities on school property is allowed, especially before and after school. And that's what, according to this article, the Joplin, Missouri School District said they were doing. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Florida, where Nathan is on the line. Nathan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Your thoughts?
Well, I just wanted to make a comment in regards to we have a local SOGI law that is going that has been introduced into our city council here in Jacksonville, Florida. And there was an individual who spoke at one of the city council meetings about how this law would basically make some people have to decide between their religious beliefs and their business. And by the way, if anybody's in Jacksonville, Florida listening, January 24th is going to be the city council meeting. I would greatly encourage anyone to come out and show opposition to the bill. But this bill is just like so many around the country where religious liberty is taking second place to individuals' feelings. And so standing strong.
You're absolutely right, Nathan. That's exactly what it does, and they're right to be concerned because that's what's happened in other jurisdictions. This is the same thing. You know, that we've seen in community after community. Of course, we've seen many communities push back. This, in part, is what happened in North Carolina, where the legislature stepped in. It went, defining the use of bathrooms and the whole transgender thing. So some of them are different, but they all infringe upon people, business owners, private entities, being able to operate according to their faith, their religious, orthodox religious faith. And this is exactly what we were talking about in this Marist poll commissioned by the Knights of Columbus. 89% of Americans see protecting religious freedom as a priority. 65%, this is a big number, 65% to 25% say that religious freedom should trump these type of laws that you're talking about there, Nathan, in Jacksonville, Florida. So I hope folks will join you there on the 24th to be a part of that. And I do hope more people will speak up. I hope they'll be emboldened to speak up. We do not have to allow this to happen in our communities. Nathan, thanks so much for listening and calling. Let's go to Texas, where Iris is on the line. Iris, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, Tony. I just want to say that I am so thankful that we only have a few days left until President-elect Trump takes office, and I think we will see a huge change in religious freedom. America, so many Christians like yourself and myself have prayed for a change and back to the religious rights that our founding fathers and troops for so many hundreds of years have fought for.
Yeah.
And I think that because of him taking the stand all through most of the election process and now from what I'm seeing for his at least cabinet officials, that they are going to stand for religious freedom. So once we hear it, just like we heard from Obama, the opposite, it will give school boards and city councils and state legislators and individuals the freedom to exercise their rights. I've never backed off, but a lot of people have been afraid to be bold.
Mm-hmm.
And the word says that the wicked flee where no man can pursue, but the righteous are as bold as lion. That's not being disrespectful or discourteous to anyone, but it's standing for what we believe. That's based
absolutely
on our Constitution.
And that's what I'm hoping that people will be emboldened. Now, I'll be very, very clear. The battle is not over. The battle has just begun. Donald Trump, the Trump administration, they cannot fix all that's broken in America. Because a lot of what we're seeing in this nation is not political. It's cultural. And at its core, it's spiritual. What is happening here, folks, is that by having a president who ran on a platform, and we are certainly going to do as much as we can to assist, to encourage, and to hold accountable to that platform, this administration, to protect religious freedom, giving the church, Christians, the space they need to do the work that has to be done in this country. So now is the time that we've got to go to work. Iris, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening. Let's go to Arkansas and work in Nick. Nick, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks. Let me start off by saying I'm a veteran. I'm a longtime listener. I'm a veteran of the United States Army, and I believe in freedom. I believe in the Constitution. I think at some point in our history as a country, Christians thought and were told that if we stand up for our beliefs and we stand up and say, hey, you know, the kids started it, it's what they want to do, we're going to allow that, that it makes us somehow unchristian. And that's not the case. My daughter goes to school in Searcy, Arkansas. Harding University is there. It's a Christian college. The public schools there, every Wednesday morning, they meet around the flagpole. They say the Pledge of Allegiance. They pray before class. And it's something that the students wanted to do. Nobody has stood against it, to my knowledge. If they have, I'm pretty sure that as a community, since 90% of people who live there are followers of Christ, have stood up and said, we're not going to change it. It's because we have our freedom. If you don't want to participate, don't. They don't require students to show up early to pray before class. It's something they choose to do. And it doesn't make us sinners, and it doesn't make us unchristian to stand up for what we believe.
Well said. Well said, Nick. You're absolutely right. Now, you're touching on something that's very near and dear to my heart, because a lot of times a lot of Christians think, well, we just have to avoid controversy. Now, I'm not one that loves controversy. I don't like controversy. But I am not going to walk away from controversy when fundamental truth is at stake. I love truth, and I love freedom more than I love the idea of a hollow peace. And that's what it is. When you avoid controversy just to try to keep the peace, it's not really peace. What you're doing is you're just trying, you're fooling yourselves. And that's what's happened in our country. We have to be bold in defending our freedoms, because you're right. And by the way, Nick, thank you for your service to our country. Men and women who have given their all to defend these rights that we have, the least we can do is exercise those rights and not shrink back into the shadows of society out of fear of being labeled with some name. We've got to live it out. And this is our moment. This is an opportunity for the Christians to step into the public square, be bold, be loving, be compassionate, be kind, but be bold, and live out our faith in a real and a tangible way, with a goal of impacting the culture, but impacting lives with the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And, you know, people say, well, I just want to win people for Christ. You win people for Christ when you stand up for the truth. Hiding the truth and being afraid to speak it indicates that you don't cherish it. Cherish the truth. Stand up for the truth. Speak the truth. All right, folks, out of time. Sorry I don't get to the rest of the calls, but I want to thank you for listening and being a part of Washington Watch. And very fitting to leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul, who says in Ephesians chapter 6, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.